Conservative? You bet. Controversial? Right again. It's time to squabble on the Jim Benson Show.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the Jim Benson Show. Conservative talk radio covering the issues that concern you here on the BBS Radio Network. Let's talk about the Chinese communist spy balloon fiasco. And yes, I said fiasco. It was an intelligence fiasco, a national security fiasco, a diplomatic fiasco. Deeply communist Chinese party compromised President Joe Biden just told the American people not to worry. The days-long passage of the intelligence-gathering spy balloon over sensitive U.S. nuclear and military sites was not a major security breach, Biden claimed. And he added, our intelligence community's current assessment is that the later three unidentified high-altitude objects detected over Alaska, Canada, the Canada-U.S. border, and Lake Huron, which is, also on the Canada border. Lake Huron on the U.S.-Canada border, and also shot down by our military, were most likely tied to benign private sector interests, hobby clubs, not the CCP. And now they're saying, well, we can't find the wreckage. Whether they have or not, I don't know, but the official word is they can't find the wreckage of these later three flying objects, so don't worry about it. China's actions regarding the balloon were provocative, brazen. It's almost like they were signaling Joe Biden, whose family has undisputably received tens of millions of dollars from Beijing. They're signaling, we own you. Wasn't it more than 50 members of our vaunted intelligence community, officials of our intelligence community, who signed a letter to the media, maybe it was former, right? To the media just before the rigged and stolen U.S. 2020 election, declaring that their assessment was that the Hunter Biden laptop revelations looked a lot like Russia or Russian disinformation. And according to Joe Biden, the allegations people were making after reading what he said is the laptop story was, quote, garbage, unquote. And two of those signers of that letter were Barack Obama's CIA chief, John Brennan, and director of national intelligence, James Clapper. These two, along with others from our intelligence community, left public service and joined mainstream media organizations where they railed constantly during Trump's presidency, contending he was a Russian agent. However, when they had to testify about what they knew under oath behind closed doors in Congress, they reportedly stated they had no evidence whatsoever that Trump was colluding with Russia to steal the 2016 election. If you've listened to previous episodes of my show about allegations that people from our intelligence community colluded with the CCP to rig and steal the 2020 and 2022 elections for the political left, you are familiar with some of these things that have been brought out. In the next few minutes, you're going to hear explicit refutation of the rosy spy balloon picture offered by Beijing Biden. In scanning alternative media for more information about the spy balloon and the three following aerial objects, which were also shot down, as I stated, but officially now they supposedly cannot find any wreckage for them, I saw claims by former Trump National Security Advisor Kash Patel and others who say the U.S. had to have known about the spy balloon as soon as it left Chinese airspace. Either that or our current military intelligence people are grossly incompetent. If they did detect the balloon much earlier than the official narrative, then it would appear that Biden and fellow CCP lackeys in our government were not intending to do anything about the balloon and only acted to track and shoot it down after U.S. media spotted it and reported the presence of the balloon over our territory. For me, this is just one more shocking example of the perilous situation we are in today, with so many U.S. government, financial, and cultural officials and leaders obviously compromised by CCP money, brainwashing, and/or intimidation. With all that Biden has done for the CCP, you can easily make the argument that we have a CCP agent installed in the White House. Give a few examples. As soon as he took office, Biden canceled a Department of Justice program Donald Trump established to find and prosecute Chinese communist spies and saboteurs. Some of these investigations are still going on, but not with this task force that would have been established, which is more effective, I believe. Biden suddenly abandoned our allies in Afghanistan. We don't know how many of those people have been murdered by the Taliban, which took over. And he pulled out our military there suddenly, leaving behind $85 billion in state-of-the-art military and a sophisticated military airbase, Bagram, just 400 miles from the Chinese border. Now, who do you think benefited from all that the most? And there at Bagram, it was reported that CCP military jet aircraft were landing immediately after the U.S. pullout. Trump banned the CCP's TikTok video sharing platform over espionage concerns, but Biden let them back and continue operating in the U.S. Biden has lifted tariffs on many imports from China, although he's kept some of Trump's tariffs. But he's been claiming that these tariffs he's lifted will help the U.S. inflation, which Biden and his handlers have caused with their disastrous economic policies driven by leftist lunatic climate change hysteria. Biden's refusal to enforce U.S. immigration law, allowing millions of people from some 160 countries to flood into our southern border, flood into our country from our southern border, is another nightmare, which also has been bringing a lot of smuggling of the deadly fentanyl, the ingredients of which come from, you guessed it, China. And which is killing hundreds of thousands of Americans overdosing on it. Biden has allowed CCP-affiliated companies to bid on jobs and work on our national electric grid. Very smart in terms of national security. And with all of this, Joe Biden is still in the White House. No doubt in my mind, the CCP's corruption and takeover of America is well underway. Here's audio from a February 17th interview Emerald Robinson did with geopolitical analyst Brandon Weikart about the spy balloon and the later high-altitude objects on her The Absolute Truth TV program on frankspeech.com. Play soundbite one, please.
We don't yet know exactly what these three objects were, but nothing right now suggests they were related to China's spy balloon program or that they were surveillance vehicles from any other country. The intelligence community's current assessment is that these three objects were most likely balloons tied to private companies, recreation or research institutions studying weather or conducting other scientific research.
Now that was Joe Biden yesterday giving remarks about the shooting down of so-called unidentified flying objects by the military in recent days, including one over Alaska and another one over Lake Huron, as well as one over Canada. Now, Joe Biden was quick to say what he wants you to believe, that the objects are not Chinese surveillance craft, but he was less quick to address exactly what are these UFOs. Cockpit audio obtained by the outlet The War Zone reveals that the Air Force pilots responsible for the takedown over Lake Huron struggled to describe the objects themselves. Listen.
Looks like a black hot works a little better as well. It's metallic or what, and there's, I can see like lines coming down below, but I can't see anything below it. Black and 11 miles. Definitely smaller than a car. On like kind of like the north side, you know, the sun's up there to the south. It's kind of like a blackish, I'm going to call it like a container. I can't really tell though what the shape is.
Now in the audio, the pilots also describe difficulty tracking the objects seen here in this video. The Washington Post reported that the first shot from the pilots missed the target because the infrared-enabled missile could not detect said target. Now, this is the fourth aircraft to be shot down by the U.S. military in the last few weeks, as you can see from this graph put together by the Daily Mail. And in the wake of the recent sightings, the U.S. announced it plans to convene a UFO task force to include the FAA, Homeland Security, and the Pentagon. Joe Biden said yesterday that the intelligence community is still addressing the objects and don't know yet what they are. But California Congressman Darrell Issa says a military officer reached out to him last night, saying that Biden's speech on the balloons was all lies. And with that, let's bring in someone who might can shed a little more light on exactly what these objects are. Joining me now is a geopolitical analyst and the author of the book, Winning Space, Brandon J. Weikart. Brandon also travels around the country briefing DOD elements on national security and emerging technology issues, so he knows a thing or two about this. Welcome, Brandon. Thank you for being on the show. In just a moment, I want to share a tweet I shared yesterday, and let's talk about it.
Sure thing. And thanks for having me.
So yesterday I tweeted this, and as of right now, 3.3 million people have seen it. It got a lot of attention very quickly. I said, breaking, top defense expert tells me the UFO shot down over Alaska by American F-22 was a Chinese exotic vehicle that is hypersonic and might even have anti-gravity technology. These vehicles can travel at Mach 5. And that the second Chinese exotic vehicle drone was shot down over Lake Huron. Pentagon is very tight-lipped about retrieval of this vehicle, as we heard from, the president himself last night. The source tells me CCP might be testing American military response to sudden incursions into our airspace. These two drones were not balloons. And I'm going to go ahead and tell my audience, Brandon, you are that DOD expert. So tell me what you say these so-called UFOs really are.
So they're not little green men. I will tell you what I told my colleagues when they brought me in 2021, when they were intercepting off the West Coast, very strange elements. I'm an open source analyst guy. They were looking for alternative opinions on what it might be that they're intercepting. So this goes back a few years. It is not little green men. It is likely the red Chinese. We have been in a tech race with China for 15, 20 years now. And the United States has been losing that tech race in several key areas, including in metamaterials, areas related to aerospace. And so in drone technology, hypersonic technology. And so what I told the military in 2021, my opinion was that this is likely some kind of either Chinese hypersonic drone surveillance technology, keeping an eye on our military posture, particularly along the West Coast, which of course is the closest to China, or it could be some newfangled Chinese propulsion system. We need to entertain this notion. I mentioned anti-gravity. Of course, that's sort of the laughing stock. Somebody mentions that and you're going to get people in the comments section, ranting about how I'm a crank. But we need to start thinking about exotic technology very seriously, because China is so heavily invested in what's known as fourth industrial revolutionary technology, and they have so many very bright people working on it with, by the way, the help of Western finance and Western know-how, that they may very well have developed a series of systems and capabilities that can basically leapfrog our own. And what we may be seeing now in our skies are not little green men, but Chinese sophisticated surveillance systems that could also be a prelude to a first strike capability. And we need to be ready for that, because our air defense network cannot defend against hypersonic technology as it is, let alone some other newfangled kind of propulsion system.
I noticed in the comments section, people seem to really question the idea that Chinese might have created technology, a drone that could reach Mach 5 speeds. How do we know if they have or have not?
So they have the world's largest, most sophisticated hypersonic wind tunnel in Beijing. And that is where they can build full versions of these drones or these hypersonic glide vehicles that can travel around the Earth at 3,800 miles an hour. In fact, they actively tested this capability, not just in the wind tunnel, but in July of 2021, and I wrote about this in the Washington Times, they deployed a hypersonic glide vehicle that circled the Earth at 3,800 miles an hour, I believe 36 times, and landed within 20 miles of a target in the Gobi Desert in China. The United States presently has no capability to actively, effectively, in real time, track these systems, let alone shoot these systems down without some kind of space-based capability that Space Force has not been given the funds and hasn't really developed the doctrine for deploying. And so we have a real gap that I think the Chinese are now exploiting, specifically because for the last month, the United States top generals have gone publicly saying we're going to be at war with China in a year, in 2025. So if you're China and you're hearing this and you've already got nefarious plans to do something against America, you're going to start escalating now, and you're going to start using capabilities and technologies that can keep your American foes on their back heels in their own homeland. And that's what we're seeing. And don't forget, this balloon was not the only thing on January 28th that crossed into American airspace, if you want to call it a balloon. The laser event over Hawaii that Japanese scientists recorded, it was, in fact, I believe those lasers were from a Chinese satellite that were attempting to use those lasers to track actively U.S. submarines, nuclear submarines, as they deploy from Pearl Harbor and head into the Indo-Pacific as part of China's overall surveillance program on our nuclear weapons capabilities. And that balloon itself, by the way, that was shot down over the Atlantic, the endo-atmospheric satellite, not a balloon, an endo-atmospheric satellite, that was hovering over Montana at 66,000 feet in the air. It was not only looking down at those Minuteman III ICBMs in Malmstrom, but it was also soaking up all the signals coming from our low Earth orbiting military satellites that were transmitting back and forth from the bases, from our ICBM bases. So they're getting ranges, I think, on our nuclear posture.
Now, you heard Edmund Robinson there citing reporting about this matter by the left-wing Washington Post, owned by Amazon with huge business in China. And also, she mentioned the Britain's Daily Mail. It's amusing that the Washington Post, this Washington, D.C. swamp rag, as I said, owned by Amazon with its huge business in China, recently identified Errol Robinson as a major American right-wing extremist influencer. And yes, China is developing and using its innovative high-altitude military vehicles thanks to big money from Wall Street and other Western financiers. With all the horrific mass murder, slavery, and terror that mark the history of the CCP, its friends on Wall Street, as they've called them, and elsewhere in the West, appear still eager to keep funding all this madness meant to ultimately destroy the U.S. Incredible. But of course, there's a lot of money to be made, so they want to rush out there and get it. Isn't it time our federal government began regulating these greedy fools and restricting their lucrative investments in our future mass destruction? I understand some people may lose some money in their stock prices, but what are we looking at here? What's the alternative? And these fools understand what's coming and what likely will happen to many of them if CCP does wind up taking us over. Here's more on China's spy balloon program. It's part of computer-generated audio narration of the text of an article posted yesterday on theepictimes.com. It's titled Inside China's Military Balloon Program. Please play soundbite 2.
Inside China's Military Balloon Program. Years before a gigantic white spy balloon from China captured America's attention, a top Chinese aerospace scientist was keenly tracking the path of an unmanned airship making its way across the globe. On a real-time map, the white blimp appeared as a blinking red dot, although in real life its size was formidable, weighing several tons and measuring 328 feet in length, about 80 feet longer than a Boeing 747-8, one of the largest passenger aircraft in the world. "Look, here's America," the vessel's chief architect, Wu Zhe, told the state-run newspaper Nanfang Daily. He excitedly pointed to a red line marking the airship's journey at about 65,000 feet in the air, noting that in 2019, that flight was setting a world record. Named Cloud Chaser, the airship had been flying for just shy of a month over three oceans and three continents, including what appears to be Florida. At the time of Wu's interview in August, the airship was hovering above the Pacific Ocean, days away from completing its mission. Wu, a veteran aerospace researcher, has played a key role in advancing the Chinese regime in what it describes as the near-space race, referring to the layer of the atmosphere sitting between 12 and 62 miles above the Earth. This region, which is too high for jets but too low for satellites, had been deemed ripe for exploitation in the regime's bid to achieve military dominance. Despite having existed for decades, the regime's military balloon program came into the spotlight recently when the United States shot down a high-altitude surveillance balloon that drifted across the country for a week and hovered above multiple sensitive U.S. military sites. That balloon, the size of three buses, was smaller than Cloud Chaser. The U.S. and Canadian militaries have since taken down three flying objects over North American airspace, although President Joe Biden on February 16 said those are likely linked to private companies. Wu is turning 66 this month. He has ties to at least four of the six Chinese entities Washington recently sanctioned for supporting Beijing's sprawling military balloon program, which the U.S. administration said has reached over 40 countries on five continents. As a specialist in aircraft design, Wu has helped develop the Chinese regime's homegrown fighter jets and stealth technology during his more than three decades in the aerospace field, taking home at least one award for his contribution to the military. He was the vice president at Beihang University in Beijing, a prestigious state-run aeronautics school, until he voluntarily gave up the title for teaching and research in 2004, and he once served on the Scientific Advisory Committee for the People's Liberation Army General Armaments Department, a now-dissolved agency in charge of equipping the Chinese military. Public records show that Wu is well-connected in the aerospace field, with stakes in many aviation firms. He is the chairman of Beijing-based Eagles Men Aviation Science, one of the six firms that, along with its branch in Shaanxi, Washington has named as culprits in the balloon sanctions. Both Beihang and the Harbin Institute of Technology, whose alma mater and dubbed China's MIT, are on a U.S. trade blacklist, the former for aiding China's military rocket and unmanned air vehicle systems, and the latter for using U.S. technology to support Chinese missile programs. Silent killer. The Chinese Communist Party has long vied for dominance in near space, which Chinese scientists see as a region for a variety of applications, from high-altitude balloons to hypersonic missiles. From high above, there's a wealth of information that an aerostat, equipped with an electronic surveillance system, can intercept and turn into an intelligence asset. If you're flying a balloon that is 100,000 feet up in the air, you've got visibility on the ground of hundreds and hundreds of miles over several states, because it's up so high, said Art Thompson, co-founder of California aerospace company Sage Cheshire Aerospace. During his three decades in the aerospace industry, Thompson has worked on the B-2 stealth bomber and was technical director for the Red Bull Stratos project that broke the record for the highest balloon flight and the largest manned balloon. Whether it's phone data, radio data, transmissions from aircraft, as to what the airplanes are, who owns it, all that data is available, Thompson said. As early as the 1970s, efforts were underway at the state-run Chinese Academy of Sciences to explore high-altitude balloons, according to a state media report. Lacking the aid of computers, Chinese researchers drew inspiration from German and Japanese aerospace books and cut up newspapers to piece together prototypes. The result was a helium balloon with an aluminum basket, altogether about the size of a typical hot air balloon. The team triumphantly named it Happy and flew it into the stratosphere in 1983 to observe signals from a neutron star. For the Chinese military, there's high strategic value in aerostats, a technology that was in use as early as the late 1700s by the French as lookouts. Compared to airplanes or satellites, balloons are cheaper and easier to maneuver, can carry heavier payloads and cover a wider area, and are harder to detect, two regular columnists wrote in a 2021 article for PLA Daily, the Chinese military's official newspaper. They consume less energy, allowing them to loiter in a target area for an extended period. And critically, they are often not caught by radars, so they can easily evade an enemy's air defense system or be classified as UFOs. Indeed, that appears to have occurred. Biden administration officials said they were able to retroactively detect three Chinese spy balloons that traveled over the United States during the Trump administration and another after Biden took office. Both Taiwan and Japan have since identified several suspected Chinese balloon incursions in recent years, and are now threatening to shoot down any suspected objects in their airspace. Chinese military researchers have also touted the utility of these balloons during combat. Newspaper articles and research papers have pored over balloons' potential to screen for missiles, planes, and warships in lower space, serve as a medium for wartime communications, drop weapons to attack enemies, conduct electromagnetic interference, and deliver food or military supplies over a long distance. In the future, balloon platforms may become like submarines in the deep sea, a silent killer that invokes terror, the military columnists said. Such statements are not hyperbolic, according to Thompson. Paradoxically, the slow pace of a balloon, when used well, is in fact its strength. It's virtually invisible on radar, said Thompson. While people may be concerned about an intercontinental missile flying over, which would take several minutes, a balloon could transport one discreetly without being detected. Now, when you decide to release that missile, it doesn't take several minutes, it takes only a matter of seconds, he added. We can't respond fast enough. It would hit us before we'd know what happened. It's a scary scenario. It's funny that one of the oldest technologies is potentially also very dangerous.
Now, you heard it stated there that these Chinese spy balloons have been sighted over some 40 countries around the world, including in Latin America. This was just recently as well, in connection with the one that was over the U.S. There was another sighted over Latin America, which supposedly crashed. Also over South Korea, Japan, the Philippines, and Taiwan. Although the Biden administration claimed these balloons have been detected over U.S. airspace during the Trump administration, Trump and his top officials have adamantly denied this. Trump, you see, is always to blame for anything bad that happens during Biden's tenure in the White House. And while we're on the subject of CCP penetration of the USA, here's audio from a recent edition of Trevor Loudon's Counterpunch TV program on Epic TV regarding the infiltration of communist sympathizers in Congress. Play soundbite 3, please.
Welcome to another edition of Counterpunch, the show that exposes the unfolding world communist revolution and pushes back. Thanks for liking the show, share the show, subscribe to Epoch TV. Well, it's great news that Kevin McCarthy, the new Republican Speaker of the House, has carried through his promise and removed Adam Schiff and Eric Swalwell from the House Intelligence Committee. The scandal is that either of them were ever on it. Eric Swalwell was deeply compromised by Christine Fong, the Chinese spy.
I think it's unpatriotic, and yes, I think it's corrupt.
Adam Schiff, although he was condemning President Trump incessantly over Russia, has a long history of involvement with the Committee of 100, one of Communist China's biggest influence operations in the United States. This was a man throwing stones, absolutely. Now, Kevin McCarthy says he's removing these two people because the Intelligence Committee is about national security, and these people are not trustworthy enough to serve on it. Well, that's absolutely true. But if national security is the criterion, I would say there's probably another 50 or 60 Democrats that should be removed. Now, I want to give a list, my list, to Kevin McCarthy of who else he should remove from committees. And this is just a preliminary list. I could go a lot more deeper than this. Now, talking of the Intelligence Committee, Jim Himes of Connecticut serves on that. He wrote his thesis at Harvard, I believe, on the Sandinista self-defense units. These were the sort of the civilian police force of the communist Sandinista revolution. And he was very much in favor of this. He was elected with the help of the Connecticut Communist Party, and is very, very closely involved with a group called the Council for a Livable World, which was set up by a Soviet agent, Leo Szilard, about 60 years ago, to elect congressmen and senators who would vote to destroy the United States military. You think that might be grounds for looking at Jim Himes?
We will now turn to the...
And then there's Andre Carson, also on the Intelligence Committee. He's from Indiana, an open, devout Muslim, but he's heavily involved in several very radical Muslim groups. at a conference of ICNA, the Islamic Circle of North America, which has direct connections to Pakistani intelligence movements. This is what he said.
At this convention right now, we're having secret meetings that we're plotting to destroy this country. But I say to those who are here undercover, Allah will not allow you to stop us.
A couple of people on the Intelligence Committee, Joaquin Castro of Texas and Jason Crow of Colorado, are also heavily involved with a group called Common Defense.
We are a progressive veterans organization. A lot of these progressive policies, they are really very popular with the military.
Many of us are in the fight to move the country towards a progressive future.
Now, that's a very left-wing veterans group. And it makes a lot of submissions on the U.S. military. It's always trying to get the U.S. military cut. Now, Common Defense, the chairman of the board of Common Defense is Judith LeBlanc of the Communist Party USA, one of the top communists in the country. Her second in command is Jonathan Smucker of Democratic Socialists of America. So this is a Marxist-run organization, and both Jason Crow and Joaquin Castro are involved with it. Now, armed services. Now, this is something to do with national security. I think you would agree, Speaker of the House. On that committee, you've got Joe Courtney of Connecticut. He is heavily involved with the Communist Party in Connecticut. Here he is with Joel Fishman, Edie Fishman, and Tom Connolly, and Wynn Heimer, all leading members of the Connecticut Communist Party. We need to understand the Communist Party is loyal to China. And Joe Courtney chairs the submarine committee of the Armed Services Committee, and China is currently building submarines to counter the United States in the Pacific. So is it not a little bit of a worry that the head of subcommittee of the Armed Services Committee is mingling with pro-Chinese communists? Could there be grounds for concern here? Now, here's Mark Vasey from Texas, who also serves on the Armed Services Committee. Here he is with Gene Lance, one of the leaders of the North Texas Communist Party. Lance and Mark Vasey are like this. They're buddies. They're bosom buddies. And Sylvia Garcia, also from Texas, she is very much involved with a group called the Texas Organizing Project. It used to be called Texas ACORN, and that's led by communists like Bernard Sampson and Reverend James Caldwell. You heard me right. Reverend James Caldwell is a member of the Houston Communist Party. Now, I mentioned Common Defense before, the left-wing veterans group headed by a leading member of the Communist Party, Judith LeBlanc. Well, members of the Armed Services Committee who are involved in Common Defense, all Democrats, are Ruben Gallego of Arizona, who's now standing for U.S. Senate, Seth Moulton of Massachusetts, Ro Khanna of California, Jason Crow, again, of Colorado, Veronica Escobar of El Paso, Texas, Sarah Jacobs of California. They're all involved with Common Defense, an organization run by communists aimed to weaken the U.S. military. And they are on the Armed Services Committee right now. So Homeland Security, Speaker McCarthy, is Homeland Security to do with national security? I would think so. Well, the head of the Homeland Security Committee, when the Democrats were in power, now the ranking member, I believe, is Benny Thompson of Mississippi. Now, he used to support the Republic of New Africa back in the 70s.
Fairly and given every opportunity afforded them by law. This was not done in the case of the Republic of New Africa. They are charged with obstructing justice. This, I believe, is an attempt on part of law enforcement officials to stop the Republic from building its community. My position is that people are entitled to live as they choose, so long as they are law-abiding and peaceful.
That was a black power type of group that actually killed policemen. And he defended this group. He was heavily involved in the forerunners of Democratic Socialists of America and also the Communist Party USA. In 2000, Benny Thompson went to Communist Cuba and had a meeting with the communist dictator Fidel Castro. Out of that meeting Castro agreed to set up scholarships, which have now trained about 150 young Americans in free medical scholarships in Cuba, with all the indoctrination that goes with it. Many of these young kids are the sons and daughters of American Communist Party members. And now those young people are all over America stirring up revolution.
The other was a novel idea raised by the president of Cuba to assist in the training of medical students in Cuba to come back and work in my congressional district.
Benny Thompson should be investigated by the Department of Homeland Security, not serving on the Homeland Security Committee. You've also got Sheila Jackson Lee, who serves on the Homeland Security Committee of Texas. Now, she's very heavily involved in the Muslim Public Affairs Council. That's a very left-wing Muslim body, very radical, and so radical they have a member of the South African Communist Party on their advisory board. Now, they have a program of putting interns into the offices of left-wing Congress members. They've put about well over 100 in the last few years, six of them in Sheila Jackson Lee's office. She's had six of these hard left interns. Many of them are involved in CARE, many of them are involved in Students for Justice for Palestine, a communist group, and many involved in the Muslim Student Association, which is a radical feeder group for other radical left-wing Islamic groups. Now, Eric Swalwell is on this committee as well, the Homeland Security Committee. So if he's not fit for intelligence, I think it's fair to say he's not fit for Homeland Security either. Is that a fair comment, Speaker McCarthy?
I spoke earlier about how so many former U.S. intelligence community officials, when they leave government service, gravitate to high-paying positions as consultants for leftist media outlets like MSNBC. I call it MSNBCCP, whose parent company, NBC Universal, has big business in communist China. CNN, also known as the Communist News Network, and whose parent company, Warner Media, I believe now, is it called, also has had major business in China. And, of course, Twitter, where former FBI General Counsel James Baker served as Deputy General Counsel and reputedly worked with government officials to censor conservative views and organizations. Here are a few minutes of audio from a recent U.S. House of Representatives committee hearing where Baker and other now fired Twitter executives were grilled on their actions in this respect. Play soundbite four, please.
You, ladies and gentlemen, interfered with the United States of America 2020 presidential election, knowingly and willingly. That's the bad news. It's going to get worse because this is the investigation part. Later comes the arrest part. Your attorneys are familiar with that.
You know, Elon Musk took over Twitter and he banned 44,000 accounts that were promoting child porn. You permanently banned my Twitter account, but you allowed child porn all over Twitter. So glad that you're censored down. I'm so glad you've lost your jobs. Thank God Elon Musk bought Twitter.
Where did you go to medical school?
I did not go to medical school.
I'm sorry?
I did not go to medical school.
That's what I thought. Why do you think you or anyone else at Twitter had the medical expertise to censor a doctor's expert opinion?
Our policies regarding COVID were designed to protect individuals. We were seeing...
You guys censored Harvard-educated doctors, Stanford-educated doctors, doctors that are educated in the best places in the world, and you silenced those voices.
You silenced members of Congress from communicating with their constituents. You silenced me from communicating with the American people over a freaking joke. Now, who the hell do you think that you are?
Got a little personal yesterday. The long-awaited congressional investigations into the Biden regime's censorship of Americans on social media finally kicked off yesterday in Washington, D.C. Former Twitter officials were asked about their constant censorship activities and their ties to the FBI. Former Twitter lawyer and former FBI lawyer Jim Baker seemed to suffer from selective memory loss at yesterday's hearing, which was, you know, convenient for him.
Simple question. You talked to the FBI about the Hunter Biden story.
I do
to the best of my recollection, I did not talk to the FBI about the Hunter Biden story before that day.
You talked to him after it. You said your response is real specific to the chairman. You said, I did not talk to the FBI about the Hunter Biden laptop story that day. I assume that day is October 14th. I want to know if you talked to him on the 13th or before, or if you talked to him on the 15th and after.
I don't recall speaking to the FBI. Sitting here today, I don't recall speaking to the FBI at all about the Hunter Biden matter.
Well, then why'd you answer it the way you did?
Many people, including myself, watching yesterday's hearing, were frustrated with how often Baker repeatedly used attorney-client privilege as an excuse not to answer questions. Marjorie Taylor Greene cheered the fact that Elon Musk had fired these four Twitter executives, and then she pointed out that Yoel Roth had found time to ban Marjorie Taylor Greene's Twitter account, but not to ban child pornography on Twitter. But the star of the show was the fearless freshman Florida Congresswoman Anna Paulina Luna.
Yes or no, did you communicate with a private entity, the government agency, on a private cloud server, yes or no?
The question was if I
could. Yes or no? Yeah, I'm on time. Yes or no?
Ma'am, I don't believe I can give you a yes or no.
Well, I'm going to tell you right now that you did, and we have proof of it. This, ladies and gentlemen, is joint action between the federal government and a private company to censor and violate the First Amendment. This is also known, and I'm so glad that there's many attorneys on this panel, joint state actors. It's highly illegal. You are all engaged in this action, and I want you to know that you will be all held accountable.
Anna Paulina Luna put the focus exactly where it should be on the fact that our intelligence agencies were sending secret messages to Twitter's top censorship officials in direct violation of the First Amendment. That's right. The Biden regime has been very busy suppressing the free speech rights of average Americans using people like Yoel Roth, as joint state actors. Now, that's totally illegal. It's not a gray area of the law. The FBI has simply seized power in America and now acts as if it controls all three branches of government along with their social media companies. There's a word for this sort of crime, and that word is treason. Another thing happened at the end of yesterday's hearings, and it was the perfect example of an old phrase, timing is everything. The entire internet basically stopped working. Most of the websites and apps that Americans use every day just stopped working all at once. Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, Google, YouTube, they all went down. What are the odds of Twitter, Facebook, Google, and Instagram going dark on the very day that Congress is investigating Twitter as essentially an FBI censorship tool? In other words, this wasn't an accident. When our intelligence agencies cannot control what Americans say, then the next best thing is to do is to shut down the tools that we now use to say anything at all. Now ask yourself this question. Who benefited from a total social media shutdown yesterday? And the answer is obvious, of course. The FBI, the CIA, and DHS. These agencies also have the power to shut down the internet this way. So what you're seeing right now is a dark mirror of post-constitutional America. If you're part of the baby boom generation, the best way to explain yesterday is that you just had a glimpse behind the curtain and you saw the Wizard of Oz. America's no longer a democracy. The so-called civil servants who run the CIA and the FBI don't answer to the American people or to the politicians that we elect anymore. These deep state bureaucrats are actually in charge, and they now mean to be our permanent rulers, whether we like it or not.
That was Emerald Robinson again, by the way, from another one of her recent programs. Now that Elon Musk has bought Twitter and has been cleaning house there, exposing the collusion between the FBI and Twitter to censor conservatives, among other things, and James Baker, who I referred to earlier, and the others being grilled at that congressional hearing have been fired from Twitter, it's nice to see them being threatened with indictments for their actions. But given that, even if some of these people eventually are indicted for various crimes, wouldn't they likely be tried in Washington, D.C., epicenter of the left-wing dominated establishment's infamous swamp with all its leftist ideologues and apparent CCP-compromised officials? Or perhaps another similar leftist bastion? Good luck getting any convictions, and that's let alone getting the indictments. Retired U.S. Air Force Lieutenant General and former Fox News commentator Thomas McInerney has been saying that CCP operatives have been using a CIA supercomputer called the Hammer along with a program developed with it known as Scorecard, to wage cyber attacks on voting equipment across the U.S. in the 2020 and 2022 elections that we know of, switching, well, that has been alleged anyway, switching millions of votes cast for Donald Trump and Joe Biden and for Trump-endorsed candidates to CCP-favored candidates. Our federal government's Department of Homeland Security, Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency, CISA, has found major security flaws in our electronic voting equipment. Not only this, but according to an Associated Press report just yesterday, Fox News, which is being sued by Dominion Voting Equipment Company, has uncovered through its discovery in the case that Dominion's own employees expressed serious concerns about the security of its machines. Yet all across America, we still widely use electronic voting equipment and software, which is all said to be very similar in its what they call DNA. It's hardware and software program. According to election integrity activist Mike Lindell's lawsuit against Dominion, which was dismissed by a so-called judge as being frivolous, China appears to have a huge ownership stake in Dominion and is infinitely familiar with its equipment and software, all of which is the same or similar, as I mentioned, to other voting equipment companies used in U.S. by U.S. election workers. McKinnerty has said he suspects but can't prove that James Baker may have been involved in giving CCP operatives access to the hammer and scorecard. Mary Fanning and Alan Jones, who've been posting articles about the hammer on the website theamericareport.com, and in their reports they've been saying, they also have a book out about it, it's there on their website. You can actually buy it on Amazon, to their credit, Amazon is selling books still. It's an ebook, $5. That the hammer was used years earlier to spy on millions of Americans illegally and collect data, which can be used to compromise people. They have said that they have been unable to find any information about James Baker's past prior to his graduating from Notre Dame University in 1983, where he was mentioned on the commencement program. They describe Baker as a ghost-like character with a mysterious, non-existent past as far as official records show. So who really is this guy? And where did he come from? Whatever the true origins of the FBI and Twitter's James Baker, it's high time that Congress launched an investigation to determine if hammer and scorecard actually exist, if they are in fact being used by red Chinese operatives to help throw U.S. elections, and if so, who in the U.S. were involved in what would have to be espionage and treason? Fanning and Jones claim Joe Biden was and is aware of the hammer and scorecard and that they were used to win a primary election against Biden's opponent, the longtime communist-admiring fool, Bernie Sanders, now a member of the Biden administration. Well, that's all for our program today. As always, we hope you found today's content of interest and value. You can listen to a podcast of today's show when it's posted soon on the Jim Benson Show pages at bbsradio.com. Look for us again with another live show 2 weeks from today in the same time slot. Have a great rest of your day and evening.